Palestinian people in the Gaza Strip. And Iran condemns the latest deadly Israeli airstrikes on Syria's northwestern province of Aleppo. Hello and welcome, everybody. It's nearly 6 months into Israel's genocidal onslaught on Gaza. The regime's warplanes and artillery keep pounding the besieged strip, causing more deaths and destruction. According to the health ministry in Gaza, 71 people lost their lives and over 100 more injured in attacks since Thursday. In their latest attack, the regime's jets bombed the premise of a sports club in Gaza City, leaving 7 Palestinians dead. Eyewitnesses said some 30 people were killed in another strike targeting an industrial zone in the same area. Elsewhere in Gaza, at least 12 Palestinians were killed in a bombing of a house in the southern city of Rafah. 8 people were also killed after a house was struck by a missile in the Al-Marazi refugee camp in the central part of the strip. The war on Gaza that started in early October has so far left more than 32,600 Palestinians dead, mostly women and children. Meanwhile, the Palestinian Central Bureau of Statistics said in a report that 70% of homes in Gaza are uninhabitable now. Earlier, we spoke to our correspondent Moti Abu Mosabeh in the central Gaza city of Deir al-Bala, which said Israel keeps targeting Rafah despite knowing that the city is currently housing nearly 1.5 million displaced Palestinians.
Let's begin with Rafah City, as the Israeli warplanes carried out several rural airstrikes against a residential building located in Al-Nasr neighborhood, which is located in the northern part of Rafah City. In the meantime, the Israeli artillery maintained shelling the eastern part of the city of Rafah City with more intense shelling that reached the residential buildings there, knowing that Rafah is still accepting roughly 1.4 million Palestinian evacuees who are still taking shelter in that area amid the continuous airstrikes and attacks. When it comes to Khan Yunis city, the current situation is still dreadful as the Israeli warplanes maintained carrying out several airstrikes against the western part of the city, particularly the surrounding areas of the Nasser Medical Complex and the Al-Amal Hospital. Those areas have been subjected to heavy bombardments and attacks for the last 3 consecutive days after the Israeli occupation forces reiterated their ground offensive against that area. Needless to mention that the vast majority of the buildings there were completely destroyed over the ceaseless and the incessant Israeli attacks and airstrikes. Even in the eastern parts of Khan Yunis city, particularly Al-Karara neighborhood, it was subjected to heavy attacks of the Israeli artillery over the last night. When it comes to the central area of Gaza Strip, the Israeli occupation forces also committed another appalling massacre against the Palestinian civilians, particularly in Al-Maghazi refugee camp. In Gaza City, the current situation is still over catastrophic as the Israeli occupation forces are still attacking the Ashifa Square and the surrounding areas for the successive 12th consecutive day with more airstrikes, more shelling and more gunfire towards the residential buildings there.
The president of the international medical charity Doctors Without Borders says there's no change on the ground in Gaza despite a recent UN Security Council resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire and flow of aid.
We haven't seen any change after this resolution on the ground. We haven't seen any impact in the people's lives there every day. We haven't seen any impact in our ways of delivering the humanitarian aid. The situation remains the same, and our asks remain the same. And these are the sustained, immediate ceasefire. We want to stop being attacked in our medical facilities. We want to stop being attacked with our medical staff. We have to protect the people that they provide the medical health care in the Gazan population. And we would like to have an unhindered humanitarian aid delivery in Gaza at this moment, which is not the case at all. We try also to meet primary health needs of the population. And I will give you an example that really shocked the international community when they saw that pregnant women, that they have to undergo a cesarean section, they had to be literally kicked out of the hospital after a couple of hours because there were no beds. Now MSF has increased the capacity of beds in order to offer at least some quality of care to these women.
Limited access to clean water amid relentless Israeli bombardments poses a serious risk to Gazans across the besieged territory. Some displaced Palestinians explain their sufferings and how they are struggling with access to drinkable water.
There is no fresh water in the school that shelters refugees. That's why we come here to fill water. It comes only half an hour a day. Water in the school is undrinkable. It's salty. What can we do? We have to walk 1 kilometer to get water.
People are suffering because of lack of water, considering it's salty too. We fill water in gallons instead of water tanks. It is really a suffering when it comes to obtaining fresh water. We have to queue for everything. We walk for an hour in total. Sometimes we return empty-handed without water.
We are in the month of Ramadan and we are struggling to get water to our homes. It is difficult and we are suffering from a great deal of hardship. We don't even have food to give us the energy to go collect the water, let alone the innocent children, women and the elderly.
Our problem with water has been a serious problem since the war began. Not just today. We are suffering a lot from water because all pipes and pumps stopped working since the beginning of the war.
Well, Iranians have once again taken to the streets across the country to call for an end to the Israeli genocide in the besieged Gaza Strip. In the city of Mashhad, the protesters chanted anti-US and anti-Israel slogans. While reiterating their support for the Palestinians, people also poured into the streets of the city of Isfahan to demand an end to the Israeli occupation of Palestine. They also censured the United States and Britain for their support for the regime, while calling the attacks on Gaza's Al-Shifa hospital a war crime. The protesters expressed resentment over the silence of the international community over Israeli atrocities. People around the world keep hitting the streets to vent their anger at Israel's genocide in Gaza. However, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on Wednesday vowed to go ahead with his military campaign, saying the international pressure on his regime will not work. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman has condemned the latest deadly Israeli airstrikes on Syria's northwestern province of Aleppo. Nasser Kanani deplored the attacks as a flagrant violation of international laws and Syria's sovereignty. He urged the international community to take preventive measures against such atrocities. He added the Israeli airstrikes had coincided with a drone attack by terrorists revealed the regime's nexus and support for terror groups operating in Syria. The statement came hours after Israeli warplanes targeted multiple locations in Aleppo. The Syrian military also reported a simultaneous drone strike that was launched by terrorists from Idlib. Syria says the pre-dawn Israeli attacks left a number of civilians and military personnel dead and injured. Damascus has time and again complained to the United Nations over the Israeli assault, urging the world body to take actions against such violations. Ibrahim Wahdi, our correspondent in Damascus, joined us earlier with more details on the latest Israeli attacks on Syria's Aleppo.
According to the Syrian Ministry of Defense, at 1:45 a.m., the Israeli enemy launched an air attack from the direction of Etiria, southeast of Aleppo, targeting several points in Aleppo countryside in conjunction with a drone attack carried out by the terrorist organization in Idlib and Aleppo western countryside in an attempt to target civilian areas in Aleppo city and its surrounding. The aggression resulted in martyrdom and injury of several civilians and soldiers and material losses to public and private property. That was the statement of Minister of Defense. Now in details, two pairs of Israeli warplanes used the Jordanian airspace to infiltrate the Syrian airspace through or over the illegal U.S. base in Al-Tanf. They infiltrated the Syrian airspace towards the depth of the Syrian desert. To before Etiria, they launched two waves of missiles targeting two sites in the west and the eastern countryside of Aleppo, and one site in the western countryside of Aleppo. The aggression targeted ammunition warehouses and gas station in Jibrin and Al-Sfiri area, east of Aleppo countryside, next to the Aleppo International Airport. Now, Aleppo International Airport has not been targeted. It's intact, but the aggression resulted in massive destruction in buildings and private and public properties. The aggression is considered to be the first so far on Aleppo governorate, and has resulted in more than 30 martyrs and 18 wounded. Firefighting teams have managed to control the fire erupted by the aggression, while civil defense teams are still searching for survivors so far. The explosions kept going for about 2 to 3 hours due to the interception of the Syrian air defenses to the attack, the Israeli attack, and also as well the drone attack, the massive drone attack launched by the terrorists in Idlib and Aleppo Western countryside.
Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement and Israeli forces have once again hit each other's positions amid growing tensions over the war on the Gaza Strip. The Israeli military has targeted a vehicle in the city of Tyre with a drone, leaving one Lebanese dead. Hezbollah has also carried out retaliatory missile strikes on Israeli positions in the occupied territories. Our Beirut correspondent Mariam Saleh joined us earlier with more details.
Well, the latest I was a vehicle in the town of Azuri, which is in the area of Tyre. In South Lebanon, it's clear that it was an assassination. However, we do not know whether the main figure that was assassinated was a Lebanese member of the Lebanese resistance or the Palestinian resistance. That comes as part of the wave, the routine assassinations that the Israelis have been launching against Lebanon. Hezbollah has responded also, or as part even of their routine operations against a target in the Shabaf Farms in against the barracks of Zibdin. Specifically, the first time they targeted it with the guided missiles, the second time it was with a Falak rocket. But the most significant development, which is linked to this confrontation, is that we saw yesterday Hezbollah used for the first time, Israeli media actually said that in the last 2 days, Hezbollah targeted the Israeli settlement using heavy rockets like Falak, like Burkan, for example, also. And that was the first time, as Israeli media is saying, instead of using Katyusha rockets, they are using more heavier rockets that would lead to more destruction in the settlements, not only against military targets. The Israelis said they had lost patience, but the night before, of course, they had already committed two massacres in Al-Naqoura and other areas. And before that, we had the massacre of the medical personnel, medical facility in Hibeti, also in South Lebanon. And so it seems that there is this ping pong actions and military reactions from Hezbollah as well, who said that they will not also tolerate these continuous attacks against the medical personnel and launch these heavy rockets against the settlements as well. And we saw that there was images coming out from the settlements, how we had huge destruction and a lot of areas which even led to the killing of settlers and not only military personnel.
Pakistan has hosted a conference on freedom of Palestine in the capital, Islamabad, in solidarity with the oppressed Palestinians in Gaza. The participants called on the international organizations to bring about an immediate humanitarian ceasefire in the besieged territory. Nasser Kazmi has more.
In a fervent display of solidarity with the oppressed people of Gaza, a high-profile event dubbed Palestine Freedom Conference was convened in the capital, Islamabad. Political leaders, scholars, and representatives from various advocacy institutions gathered at the conference to condemn the ongoing Israeli atrocities in Gaza and to advocate for the rights of Palestinians.
The United Nations role is getting more and more important, but we see that United Nations is going on the agenda of Israel and the agenda of America. They are not doing their good efforts to stop this war. Beside stopping the war, they are provoking the war. They are supporting the war. United Nations should take important steps to stop this war.
The event was aimed at amplifying voices against the relentless Israeli attacks on unarmed civilians in Gaza. Scholars and experts also slammed global powers for their role in perpetuating the ongoing genocide and supporting the Israeli regime.
We are not expecting much from the United Nations. More than 3,000 innocent men, women and children have been killed. But the UN has no courage to stop Israel from doing these inhuman acts in Gaza. Muslim leaders have taken no effective step for a ceasefire in the besieged territory. They should feel shame for their silence on this massacre.
The gathering denounced Israel's military aggression against Gaza and emphasized the importance of upholding the international humanitarian law.
There is a joint venture of Western powers, NATO and our other allies. They are supporting Israel. They are part of this all aggression and inhuman acts of Israel. That is the reason. Unfortunately, the Muslim world and the leaders of the Muslim world, they are unable to do some solid work to relieve the pain and the sufferings of Palestinians.
The conference underscored the urgent need for international intervention to halt what it described as the bloodshed in Gaza. It also called for practical and immediate steps to alleviate the sufferings of the war-stricken Palestinians.
Participants in the Palestine Freedom Conference pledged to continue their efforts for the people in the Gaza Strip. They vowed to mobilize the support for the implementation of the UN resolution that called for an immediate ceasefire in the territory. Nasser Kazmi, Islamabad.
Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian has made a visit to the Turkmen capital of Ashgabat in order to boost bilateral ties between the two countries. Farzana Ashurin has more on that.
Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian made a visit to the Turkmen capital of Ashgabat on Wednesday in order to boost bilateral ties between the two countries. Amir Abdullahian met with Turkmen President Sardar Gurbanguliyevich Berdimuhamedov. The Iranian top diplomat also met with his Turkmen counterpart Rashid Meredov. During the meeting, both sides expressed satisfaction with the progressing relations between the two countries. Pursuing the memorandum of understandings assigned by the both countries' presidents in 2022 was also one of the main goals of the visit.
One of the main goals of the visit was to pave the way for Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi's visit to Turkmenistan in order to pursue the agreement signed between the two countries.
According to Iranian officials, the relationship between Iran and Turkmenistan is not just a neighborly relationship, but a relationship of brotherhood, and they seek to deepen the ties as regional policy is high on the agenda of the Iranian president's foreign policy. The Iranian foreign minister's visit to Ashgabat is aimed at consolidating bilateral ties. Iran and Turkmenistan enjoy good relations as two neighboring countries, and now Tehran and Ashgabat are planning to further boost their relations in various fields, including trade and economy. Farzan Ashuryun, Ashgabat.
That's it with the world news for now. Bye, everybody.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us.
واقعیت زندگی
and try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible?
القرآن
از راه قرآن.
By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من، این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم نیست.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. 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 کتاب
More than 200 legislators from European countries which fund Israel militarily recently called for their countries to stop selling weapons to Tel Aviv, citing violations of international law in Israel's relentless bombardment of Gaza. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The website New Arab has covered this story and tells us more. The European Union has been marred by deepening divisions over Israel's genocidal war against Palestinians of Gaza, which shows the world's most powerful bloc is fast decaying. The 5 months of no-holds-barred Israeli assault on the besieged territory has not only exposed the international community, but it has also laid bare deep fault lines in the European Union. The heads of the 27 European countries have limited themselves to issuing passive statements about sending humanitarian aid to Gaza, whilst refusing to make an unambiguous call for a complete ceasefire in Gaza or building pressure on the Israeli regime to end its military assault on Gaza. In its recent statement, the Council of Europe, after condemning the operations of Palestinian resistance movements and emphasizing Tel Aviv's so-called right to defend itself, called for unhindered access to humanitarian aid for the people of Gaza, including through humanitarian corridors. However, according to a report in Politico, European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen angered the European Union's foreign policy team in an unusual move. Some 800 European Union staff also wrote a letter protesting that von der Leyen showed unjustified bias towards Tel Aviv. Ursula von der Leyen has been unequivocal and unapologetic about her support for the Israeli regime and the ongoing genocide of Palestinians in Gaza, which hasn't gone down well with some EU officials. She was one of the first Western leaders to visit the occupied Palestinian territories in October to give her stamp of approval to Netanyahu's war on Gaza. More recently, in von der Leyen's speech at the Hudson Institute in Washington, she again harped about the Zionist regime's right to defend itself, whilst completely ignoring the humanitarian catastrophe in Gaza. Commenting on the European Commission President's speech, a senior European Union official said, she expressed her personal views and presented an unbalanced view of EU's position on the situation in Gaza. According to some officials, Ursula von der Leyen's relationship with EU Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell has become strained, and the crisis has heightened as the two of them have slightly different stances on Gaza. Last month, in an interview with the Spanish daily El País, Josep Borrell slammed the EU chief over her visit to the occupied Palestinian territories in October of last year, pointing to a deepening rift within the European bloc. Josep Borrell said the trip by von der Leyen, with such an absolutely pro-Israeli stance, without representing anyone but herself in a matter of international politics, has had a high geopolitical cost for Europe. Spanish newspaper El País, in a separate report, said Israel has been irked by the EU foreign policy chief Josep Borrell because Borrell has situated himself on the Palestinian side. On the other hand, Michael Oren, a former Israeli envoy to the United States, said the EU foreign policy chief should not be allowed to set foot on the occupied Palestinian territories. These differences and divisions have even spread to other leaders of the alliance, because the history of the European Union has shown that in times of crisis and when the bloc faces serious challenges, it cannot make comprehensive decisions and is not able to speak in one voice. The former Belgian Foreign Minister Mark Iskens, on the eve of the US-led international coalition's military attack on Iraq in 1990, said Europe is an economic giant but a political dwarf and a military worm. A clear demonstration of that has been the war between Russia and Ukraine, in which no initiative has been seen on the part of the Europeans to end the war. Europe has surrendered itself to the United States. Although the bloc has a unanimous voice on Ukraine, it has become a divided house on Gaza Strip. The Israeli genocide case at the International Court of Justice at The Hague, Netherlands, brought by South Africa, also drew attention to these deepening differences in the European Union. Germany had, before the ICJ ruling, said the genocide case lacked any basis and declared that it would intervene in the International Court of Justice's proceedings as a third party. Some other countries have welcomed the ICJ's ruling. The ceasefire resolution introduced by the United Nations Security Council and the UN General Assembly in recent months also laid bare these glaring differences and divisions within the European bloc. For example, on 26 of October last year, 8 EU countries voted in favour of a ceasefire in Gaza at the UN General Assembly, while 4 European countries voted against it. On 12 of December last year, in another vote, 17 European Union countries backed the truce arrangement, while 2 countries voted against it. Some other European Union member states, including France and Spain, were against it for different reasons. On the situation in the Red Sea, European Union member countries have not been on the same page. On 11th of January this year, only 8 countries, 3 of them EU members, Denmark, the Netherlands and Germany, signed a joint statement with the United States and Britain, justifying the airstrikes against Yemen. A but as Al Jazeera television network has also covered the same story and tells us more. According to a Belgian Member of Parliament, who is among the more than 200 lawmakers who have signed a letter calling for an arms embargo on Israel, Europe risks any credibility to speak on Russia's special operations in Ukraine if it remains silent on Gaza. Simon Mutkin, a Belgian Member of Parliament, told Al Jazeera television in an interview on Saturday 9th of March, "We are so hypocritical in Europe to speak about international law when we speak about Ukraine and Russia, but if we don't have the same views when we speak about the Palestinians, we will not have any credit in the future to speak about it." More than 200 legislators from European countries which fund Israel militarily recently called for their countries to stop selling weapons to Tel Aviv, citing violations of international law as Israel continues its relentless bombardment of Gaza. In a letter signed by parliamentarians from 13 countries, the European lawmakers announced that they would not be complicit and would take immediate coordinated action in their respective legislatures to stop their governments from arming Israel. The Belgian Member of Parliament said that his own country had to act to stop Israel as well, citing a risk of genocide if countries continue to fund Israel militarily. Simon Mutkin, who raised concerns about an internal split in the European Union that has seen the bloc struggle to address Israel's war on Gaza, cohesively said, "As a signatory country of the Convention Against Genocide, Belgium has a legal and moral obligation to act and prevent the risk of genocide. So I think this letter is a good first step, but we need to go further." The United States is by far the biggest funder of Israel militarily, providing roughly $3 billion worth of aid to Israel every year. Presently, U.S. lawmakers are debating an additional $14 billion package to support Tel Aviv operations in Gaza. Washington sent guided missile carriers and F-35 fighter jets, as well as other advanced military equipment, to the regime in Tel Aviv.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked among
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qaraati. Please stay tuned.
عیدتون رو میخواید مبارک کنید یا با دیگه میگم برکت بینه یک.
How can we bless our New Year celebrations during Nowruz? One good way is to share our knowledge and money with others. Another way is to respect the needy and poor. Another important way to bless our New Year is to start our New Year with Salat and prayer. Giving charity for yourself and others is another way of blessing our life. Visiting the orphans and the poor people is another way to bring blessings of Allah to our lives.
اگر میخواید برکت داشته باشه یک آغاز سالتون را با نماز شروع کنید.
Our happy celebrations during New Year must not be polluted with sins. If we want to be victorious both in this world and the hereafter, we must be with Allah. The true sense of the word Mubarak is when Allah blesses our life with His bounties and blessings. The start of a new year is very much important and it needs reflection on our past deeds. In this way, we can decide better for the future of our spiritual and worldly life. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qaraati. To find out more about this program, please log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran while shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. Or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
The Zionist regime is building infrastructure to carve up Gaza, prevent the return of displaced Palestinians, and change the geographical and demographic facts on the ground. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. Middle East Eye wrote, following his recent approval of a plan to invade Rafah, where 1.4 million Palestinians are sheltering, the Zionist regime Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu announced recently that the military is preparing to advance. The so-called Triumvirate War Cabinet comprising Netanyahu, War Minister Yoav Gallant, and former opposition leader Benny Gantz had already reached a consensus on a Rafah incursion to take control of the Philadelphia Corridor, also called the Philadelphia Route or Saladin Axis. In an address to the U.S. pro-Israel lobby group, AIPAC, Netanyahu insisted that the road to victory runs through Rafah, a strategy that he boasts has overwhelming support within the Zionist society. Yet, while the Zionist regime's politicians' threats of an imminent invasion of Rafah are directing the world's attention to the south, the government has accelerated the steps on the ground in northern Gaza to consolidate its occupation and ensure its longevity. A key feature of its strategy is to prevent the return of displaced Palestinians from the south as it seeks to change the geographical and demographic characters of the Gaza Strip. Satellite imagery analyzed by CNN shows that a road being built by the Zionist regime military to split Gaza in two has reached the Mediterranean coast. According to CNN report, a satellite image from March 6th reveals that the east-west road, which has been under construction for weeks, now stretches from the Gaza-Israeli border area across the entire roughly 6.5 kilometers wide strip, dividing northern Gaza, including Gaza City, from the south of the enclave. The report notes that the military used a large amount of mines and explosives to clear the area. The American-made bombs were used to destroy the remaining homes and infrastructure throughout northern Gaza, particularly in the Beit Hanun area, which borders the Erez crossing. Other areas near Gaza City, especially in its eastern suburbs, have become part of the buffer zone that the Zionist regime is building in Gaza and along the border. In the Zaytun neighborhood, amid never-ending ceasefire negotiations, the Zionist regime military is making progress in a civilian management pilot project intended to fully control the distribution of food and other provisions. It is based on the belief that whoever controls the food controls the people. This project is accompanied by the Zionist regime's strict ban on aid to Gaza and the expulsion of humanitarian organizations from the area, a policy it seeks to expand to other areas of Gaza. The Zionist regime has specifically targeted and aims to destroy the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, as part of its efforts to eliminate the refugee issue and the Palestinian right of return. Notably, the newly constructed road in the northern region fragments the city, turning it into isolated residential squares. The road's location, which extends to the area, seems to correspond to that of the planned U.S.-built floating dock, which the Biden administration proposed building as a temporary means of distributing humanitarian aid. In reality, the Zionist regime is developing the infrastructure for a permanent occupation of the Gaza Strip, with conditions that fundamentally differ from those up to the disengagement of 2005. Specifically, Gaza will no longer be considered an extension of the Palestinian population or as part of the Palestinian geographical region. Rather, the goal is to prevent the return of the displaced inhabitants, while those who succeed in returning will not find anything left to return to, as there are no homes, no neighborhoods, and no city. This is a doctrine that has been in effect since the Palestinian Nakba in 1948 and the creation of the Palestinian refugee issue, which is still defined as temporary displacement. The Zionist regime is in the process of reinstating its occupation of Gaza by taking control of the main roads, corridors, and streets. Until its unilateral withdrawal in 2005, Palestinians were denied access to these areas. The idea of dividing the Gaza Strip into areas that are accessible to the Israelis and restricted to the Palestinians dates back to the 1967 occupation. In 1971, Ariel Sharon, the Zionist regime army commander of the southern region, who later became prime minister, prepared a plan to divide Gaza and North Sinai into five settlement areas that prevent geographic continuity between Palestinians in the north, center, and south. The Zionist regime surrounds this area from the north with settlements and checkpoints, and from the south with a settlement block in the northern Sinai Desert. Sharon named it the Five Fingers Plan, and the government, headed by Golda Meir, fully adopted it in 1972. The first is the Northern Finger, which included a block of settlements in the far north of the Gaza Strip, Beit Hanun and the Erez Crossing. It aimed to expand the reach of Ascalon al-Borj to areas within Gaza. The second is the Netzarim Finger, which extends between Al-Montar or Karni Crossing and the sea. It is 8 kilometers long and separates Gaza City from the Gaza Valley and the center of the strip. Prior to 2005, the Netzarim settlement was located in the west of Gaza alongside the coast. It passed through Ar-Rashid and Salahuddin Road, the main highway in Gaza, and extended from the north to the south of the strip, forming a control point for the Gaza port. The third finger is Kesafim Access, a settlement near Shohada Street, separating Deir al-Balah from the central areas of Gaza up to Khan Yunis, where the Gash Katif settlement block was established. The fourth is the Sofa Kibbutz between Khan Yunis and Rafah. It was established in 1974 as a military post in the Sinai Peninsula and developed into a civilian farm in 1977. It was designed to extend to the sea. The fifth finger is the Yamit settlement block in northern Sinai on the outskirts of Rafah from the south, which prevents any geographical contiguity between Rafah and Sinai. 12 of its towns and an Israeli airport were annexed in 1982 after the Camp David agreement with Egypt. After this, the Philadelphia Corridor was established. By invading Rafah, the Zionist regime seeks to control the crossing with Egypt. It is worth noting that most of the fingers go from east to west, reaching the sea to prevent geographical contiguity in the Gaza Strip. The Zionist regime's goal was to cut off Gaza from the north and south in several strategic areas. However, most of the finger plans did not last over time and ended in 2005 when the government, headed by Sharon, decided to withdraw altogether from Gaza. In a recent escalation, the Settlement Council in the West Bank held a popular conference to resettle Gaza, which was attended by 12 ministers from the religious Zionism and Likud parties. The council reviewed plans to rebuild settlement blocks in the same places that were withdrawn and demolished in 2005 while implementing the disengagement plan from Gaza and the northern West Bank.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio by your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say La ilaha illallah. Never forget to say La ilaha illallah.
IRIB English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more.
You are listening to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Ammar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Alhamdulillah, we have reached to the night of arrangement or night of destiny. In the night of Qadr, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is going to decide for lots of things for us, what we are going to be in the year, during the year or during the future of our life. So the goal of a mu'min in his life is becoming a true follower of Quran, a true follower of Rasulullah, and a true follower of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salatu wassalam. And we have to work on this thing. There's a beautiful hadith from Rasulullah where he says, رُوِعَ عَنِ النَّبِيِّ أَنَّهُ نَظَرَ إِلَى بَعْضِ الْأَطْفَالِ فَقَالَ وَيْلٌ لِأَوْلَادِ آخِرَ الزَّمَانِ. Rasulullah saw a couple of children were playing on the streets. When Prophet Muhammad saw them, looked at them, he said, woe upon the children of the time of, end of the times, آخِرَ الزَّمَانِ's children. And then, مِنْ أَبَائِهِمْ, woe upon them just because of their parents. فَقِيلَ يَا رَسُولُ اللَّهِ مِنْ أَبَائِهِمُ الْمُشْرِكِينَ. Are you talking about the children, the mushrikeen's children, the pagans' children? Rasulullah replied to them, فَقَالَ لَا مِنْ أَبَائِهِمُ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ. I'm saying woe upon the children of because of their mu'min parents. And the ashab was stunned. There was no answer for them. They were just stunned and they was thinking, why Prophet Muhammad is saying woe upon the children of the mu'minin at the end of time? And then Rasulullah continued his hadith saying, لَا يُعَلِّمُونَهُمْ شَيْئًا مِنَ الْفَرَائِزِ. Because at the end of time, the parents of children, mu'minin, I mean Shia basically, the parents of the children are not going to teach their children of their wajibat and their duties. وَإِذَا تَعَلَّمُوا أَوْلَادُهُمْ مَنَعُوهُمْ. When children start learning by themselves, they will stop from these things. They will say, come on, what are you doing? Why are you following the religious values? Why are you too much behind the salat and sawm and fasting and praying and these things? وَرَّذُوا عَنْهُمْ بِعَرَضٍ عَرَضٍ يَسِيرٍ مِنَ الدُّنْيَا. And the parents will be agreed upon their children just because of being wealthy in their regular dunya life, worldly life. وَأَنَا مِنْهُمْ بَرِيٌ. And Prophet Muhammad said, I have no relationship with those type of people. وَهُمْ مِنِّي بَرَّاءٌ. And those type of parents are totally disconnected, totally away from me. That means there's no relationship between them and us. So Islam means following the teachings and guidings of Quranic values. And this is a good topic. We all have to work on that. We all should follow Quranic values and we should learn the Quranic disvalues. What are the Quranic disvalues and what are the Quranic values? We should live based on Quranic values. Those who follow the track of Quranic values, they are saved. In the night of Qadr, we have to ask from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. In this night of destiny, we have to ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, oh Allah, give us tawfiq that we are able to follow the Quranic values. Then we can follow the Quranic teachings, Quranic guidance. We can follow the values of Prophet Muhammad, the values of Ahlul Bayt. This is the main prayer, this is the main dua of this night. Laylatul Qadr means we ask from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala all of his blessings. And all of his blessings is hidden, is placed in his book, in his teachings, in his Quranic values and in his Quranic disvalues. We should keep ourselves away from the Quranic disvalues. This is a very important point. So Qadr night means where we ask from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala all of his blessings, all of his iman, all of his religious values. May Allah grant us all those values, inshallah ta'ala. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
You just listened to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Ammar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
Doing us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring
event.
In Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome. Now, the only effective and efficient way to deliver heavy goods to meet Gaza's humanitarian needs is by road, and that includes an exponential increase in commercial deliveries. Now, these are not my words, but the words of the United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres, who made the comments during his